Welcome to the Holistic Health Bites podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Nicholson, here with bite-sized episodes to empower, educate, and enlighten you with ways to lose weight, heal your gut, and achieve your ideal health so you can live an adventure-filled life. Let's dive in. Welcome back to the Holistic Health Bites podcast. Today, we are talking all about salt. Is it our friend or our foe? There's very conflicting information on salt. The mainstream media and medicine will tell you that salt is dangerous. But what does the research actually show? Most of us equate salt to sodium, but they're not actually interchangeable. Sodium can combine with chloride to make one type of salt, and that ends up being about 40% of the composition of sodium chloride is sodium. So that means for every 5 grams of sodium chloride salt you consume, only about 2 grams of that is sodium. The vast majority of adults are getting very high levels of sodium in their diet due to processed foods, not from adding salt to their own home cooking. About 70% of their sodium comes from processed foods with added salt or that are made with baking soda. So all of the flour products, breads, crackers, cookies, all of those things, even if they're not salty foods, if they have baking soda or added salt, they contain sodium. Now there's different types of salt. Table salt is the most common and it's often iodized. And it's iodized because years and years ago, before food was highly transportable, inland populations were having a lot of goiters. And they found that that was because they were lacking in iodine. Iodine is primarily found in the ocean. So if you're inland and you don't really have access to seaweed and seafood, you can be deficient in iodine. So they started adding iodine to many different foods, salt being one of the most common. And so common table salt is often iodized. This is not a kind of salt that I typically recommend people consume, not only because it's an artificial form, you know, this salt doesn't typically contain that level of iodine, but there's also a lot of contaminants generally in this kind of salt. Then there's sea salt, which is a coarser type of salt that's generally a little bit milder in flavor. It may contain some natural iodine and some other minerals. Himalayan salt is usually larger crystals. It's generally pink in color and also contains some trace minerals. Kosher salt is large, coarse, and often used to draw moisture out of meat, and it is never iodized. And then there's salt substitutes, as they're called, which generally contain potassium chloride and or a combination of potassium chloride and sodium chloride. Now, do we actually need salt? We do. Sodium is an essential element, meaning we can't make our own, but we have to have it for various functions throughout the body, like maintaining chemical and fluid balance in and around your cells, for blood pressure regulation, for muscle contractions, and for nerve impulses. Now, the sodium concentration in your body is regulated by your kidneys, your central nervous system, and your adrenal glands. So it kind of doesn't matter how much you're consuming. If your kidneys, central nervous system, and adrenals are functioning properly, you will just excrete out any excess sodium in your urine. So how much do we actually need? How much should we aim to consume? Well, the U.S. dietary guidelines say that we should aim to eat less than 2.3 grams of sodium per day, which is about 1 teaspoon. The American Heart Association limits that even further to 1.5 grams per day, which is about 3/4 of a teaspoon. And the World Health Organization puts their limit at about 2 grams per day. Now, that may sound like a lot because most of us wouldn't scoop a teaspoon of salt out of a salt container and pour it on our plate. But you would actually exceed that amount for your entire day in 1 standard bowl of soup or 1 Caesar salad. So this adds up very, very quickly, and it's really difficult to actually limit to that amount. So does the research actually back up salt restriction? There are several top quality randomized controlled trials that show no benefit in people with normal blood pressure. One study even showed correlations with higher sodium intake and longer life expectancy and lower all-cause mortality. So the people that had the highest sodium intake lived the longest and died the least from all causes. Studies do show a very small reduction in blood pressure, but they again don't really show that this correlates to an overall improved health status. It seems most likely that both having too high and having too low salt intakes have increased risks. Now, one study in particular, the PURE study, looked at over 100,000 people in 17 different countries and found that those who were excreting less than 3 grams of sodium per day in their urine had an increased risk of heart attack and death with or without blood pressure elevations. So if they were urinating less than 3 grams of sodium per day, they had the highest risk of heart attack and death. So if you're only consuming, 1.5 to 2.5 grams per day, you can't possibly be excreting 3 grams per day. And this study showed that those who were excreting less than 3 grams had the highest risk. Now, the lowest risk people in this study were excreting between 3 and 7 grams of sodium per day. There are also some unintended consequences when you have a low sodium intake, like an increased risk for insulin resistance. We're going to come back to that one. So what do you do if you do have high blood pressure? This is where it gets a little bit trickier, and we do have to really consider individuality. Studies have shown that about 25% of the population that do not have hypertension are sensitive to salt, and about 50% of the population with hypertension are sensitive to salt. So what that means is if you are sensitive to salt, your systolic blood pressure will go up by at least 5 points when you consume a higher sodium diet. The rest of the population have no impact on their blood pressure, regardless of how much sodium they consume. So for many people, when they do restrict their sodium intake, say from 3.5 grams to 1.5 grams of sodium, that equates to about a 5-point drop. Not a significant decrease, and probably not anything that's going to take anyone out of being classified as hypertensive into a normal blood pressure level. We're going to come back to blood pressure a little bit more later. Can restricting sodium actually cause harm? In a review of 185 different clinical studies, people with hypertension who followed a sodium-restricted diet for 2 or more weeks found that they had about a 3.5% decrease in blood pressure on average. Sounds pretty good. The problem is they also simultaneously experienced higher triglycerides, and higher adrenal hormones, aldosterone, adrenaline, and noradrenaline. All of these can lead to far bigger problems over time. And add to that, the people who had hypertension and were on a sodium-restricted diet also had tremendous increases in insulin resistance, regardless of whether or not they were sensitive to salt. Now, insulin resistance dramatically increases your risk of heart disease, as does higher triglyceride levels. So managing your overall diet and lifestyle will have a far greater impact on your heart disease and blood pressure than simply removing sodium will. Following a low-carbohydrate or ketogenic diet can be one tremendously valuable strategy for reducing your weight and your blood pressure while also improving your insulin resistance. But be aware, people following a whole food, low carb, or ketogenic diet may have an increased need for salt. And that's because when you reduce your carbohydrate intake, you actually lose more water that you've been retaining. Carbohydrates are hydrated carbon. They have water attached. So when you decrease your carbohydrate intake, your body will release excess water. And where water goes, minerals go. So when you're taking in less carbohydrates, you have an increased need for salt because you're excreting more minerals. Now, studies on diabetes show that those who consume the lowest amount of sodium have an increased risk of early death from heart disease and other causes. Those with type 1 diabetes were found to have the greatest risk at both the highest and lowest intake levels of sodium, but fared the best when they had moderate intake. One interesting study out of Japan followed men with type 2 diabetes and found that those who consumed the highest amount of sodium and had the greatest heart disease risk also had the worst diabetes control. Those in that same population who managed their blood sugars well didn't have the increased risk of heart disease. So this isn't just as simple as restricting sodium and improving your cardiovascular disease risk, but we also have to look at insulin management, blood sugar management, your kidney function. There's so much more to this. Now, one population that does seem to benefit from some level of sodium restriction are those with chronic kidney disease. But even still, this generally is only a moderate sodium restriction at keeping it below 4 grams per day. Now, one final caveat to consider is sodium intake relative to potassium intake. Many studies have shown that it's really not that the high sodium intake is the problem, but that these people simultaneously have low potassium. A sodium to potassium ratio is a far better predictor of heart disease and death than when looking at either one of these minerals alone. So how much potassium should you aim to get? The guidelines recommend 4.7 grams per day, but research shows that you start to get benefit at even 3.5 grams per day. You can get natural potassium from fruits and vegetables like avocado, beet greens, spinach, beans, lentils, and squash, which are all far better sources than the bananas that we've all heard about. So I highly recommend that you transition away from processed foods to more whole vegetables, some fruits, and maybe consider adding some salt substitute that has potassium chloride in it. And of course, don't be afraid of salt. If you have any questions, please hit me up. Otherwise, I'll catch you again next week. Thanks for being a faithful listener to the podcast. I'd love it if you left me a 5-star review on this podcast so that others can more easily find this valuable information. Did you know I also work one-on-one with clients? I approach solving health challenges like I approached solving crimes, by conducting a thorough investigation into your case. Sadly, hundreds of millions of people in the U.S. have insulin resistance, pre-diabetes, and diabetes, and the vast majority have no idea. I'm here to fix that. If you struggle with low energy, stubborn weight, hypertension, sleep disturbances, or any other undesired symptoms, let's talk. All you have to do is schedule a free call. The link will be in the show notes. And no, you do not need to live near me.